Susan Zarenda will be with us in the second hour. She's the author of Bells for Eli, and she'll be at the Midtown Reader for a book signing coming up in September. And then I have Staff Lieutenant Sarah Cooksey, Captain Robert Clary, talking about fire safety and injury protection. You don't want to miss any of it, so stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Another opportunity to talk with those people around town who have something to say about our fair city or what they are doing in it or why they're here, like Susan Zarenda, a remarkable individual. You're going to enjoy getting to know her. We've got her in the second hour today. Longtime educator, both at the high school and collegiate or college level. Really a nice lady, nice person, and a proficient writer, and an award-winning author now. This book, Bells for Eli, has garnered a number of accolades already along its new path, short path, just now been released. And as I mentioned, we're going to have the opportunity to see her in person. She'll be at Midtown Reader coming up in September. I don't think they have finalized the exact date for that event, but as soon as we know, we'll be sure to share that information with you, or you can go to Midtown Reader and find out for yourself. I think they're going to post it up there on their calendar page. Well, as you know, too, during this next number of months, we are focused on keeping you and I prepared for severe weather. Prepared for any kind of emergency situation. Certainly that includes fire. With all the lightning strikes that characterize this part of the world, Tallahassee being among those communities that gets an unfair share of that kind of, electromagnetic sort of fallout. I mean, every afternoon for the last several weeks, it's been the typical Tallahassee weather pattern, you know, where you can't breathe because the air is so full of water all through the day, and then comes the afternoon where even the atmosphere is choking. So it has to just dump all of that water on us. And of course, the physics of it all, the meteorology of it all, I suppose, has to do with temperature inversions and jazz, and that's where the cold air is on top and the hot air is on the bottom, and so the cold air rushing to the bottom and the hot air rushing to the top, and it creates all kinds of wind. Yeah, that's kind of the way that works, isn't it? Giving you your your weather lesson here. But, of course, the ionization of those air masses then creates these massive thunderstorms and lightning strikes, which if they hit the top of your house, yeah, and you're going to find out listening to Captain Clary and Staff Lieutenant Cooksey, they're going to tell you that it's not an uncommon situation. Happens too often, and in that regard, their business is about keeping you and I better prepared. That is to say, better informed, better aware of those kinds of risks that come throughout the year. And that's why we started the Tallahassee Prepared Information Campaign so many years ago. Actually started back in 2011, can you believe that? And about the time that our show got off the ground, we were noticing that a lot of local efforts were being made to provide people hurricane tracking maps, you know, and get your bucket of supplies and stuff. And that's all good. Of course it is. I mean, although of late, I'm not sure how many of us have a hurricane tracking map, you know, taped up to the refrigerator. Because pretty much your kids know better than you do how to find a weather radar app and pick that up on a phone or a computer, whatever, tablet. Yeah, so we saw that going down and thought, you know, hurricane season is a big deal, no question about it. And my goodness, we're still in shock, I think, from what Michael did to all of us here in the region. And the remnants of that linger, and the impact is probably, golly, probably generational. I mean, in 20 years, they'll still be trying to pull together some of the farmland and such. If you haven't driven over to, let's say, Panama City or further in the last couple of months, you ought to treat yourself. You know, get across the Apalachicola River over there, and you'll find out that these crews are still at work trying to remove all of the debris. I mean, these are dead trees that now present a horrible amount of fuel for what amounts to a threat of forest fire. Right, imagine a lightning strike hitting a pile of that kind of stuff. It's just tinder. It's just ready to go up. So my point being that, yes, hurricanes remain a constant concern, and especially this time of year, right? So we have that season when we're to be even more alert and better prepared. Then again, when we look beyond the season, we look at all the rest of the weather that comes at us 365. So then our motto is staying prepared for severe weather is not a season, it's an attitude, which really comes back to our conversation coming up here shortly with Lieutenant Cooksey and Captain Clary, because their work never ends. And they're in the business of saying, have you thought about putting smoke detectors in your attic? Because that's kind of where the fire is going to start when the lightning hits the roof of your house. Yeah, so there's that. Or how about those flash floods? How about the flooding that could invade your home? What did I see the other day? That more people die as a result of those flash floods or a storm surge than high winds and falling trees. I mean, that's kind of a horrible reminder that there are lots of parts and pieces to this business of staying prepared for severe weather throughout the year. So, Tallahassee Prepared is the campaign. The official website is just that, TallahasseePrepared.com. And we have lots of good people to thank for their participation in that effort, particularly Whidden Glass, who has signed on this year as the presenting sponsor for the entire year. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that they've apportioned part of their advertising dollars, marketing such efforts, to say, you know what, this is important. You are important to us, And we want to contribute to your welfare, so we're going to help you stay better informed and hopefully better prepared then for severe weather. So that's the way it works with our friends at Wood and Glass, also known as the Real Glass People. Been in business since 1945. Yeah. There you go, Tallahassee. Long time business, Wood and Glass down there on South Monroe, along with our friend Sellers Tile over there on Capitol Circle Northeast. And then we have Truck and Car Concepts on Mahan Drive, Tony Kelly Heating and Air, and the Mahan Animal Clinic. And our new sponsor, Capital City Gutter, has just signed up with us as of this week. So Capital City Gutter is now officially one of the participating sponsors in this year's 2021-2022 Tallahassee Prepared campaign. It's all there just for you. Stay with me. We'll talk more about it right after this break.
Witten Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Witten Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Witten Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Witten's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Witten is known for taking care of business. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking about Tallahassee Prepared, our official year-long campaign designed to keep you and I better informed, better prepared for severe weather, 365. Reading from the official website, here's a good example of some of the information that you'll find. And the nice thing is, for guys like me, it's in really big, bold font, so I can easily read it, and not a whole lot of big words, so that way, you know, I can understand it better. They could probably use some more pictures here, too, for my sake. But anyway, here's a simple planning methodology as outlined here at TallahasseePrepared.com. It says, simple planning begins with having a plan in place. Good thinking. In advance of a severe storm, be prepared to decide whether you should stay or go. Simple question. You know, you don't want to try to figure that out when, you know, the storm is approaching. So try to decide what to do in trying to decide what to do in the midst of a crisis. Not a good idea. You got to plan ahead, and you make those categorical decisions, you know, sans all of the emotional content, without all of the fear and anxiety that you're going to face no matter what you do when these things are approaching. So you plan ahead. It'll save you time, and you'll make a more logical, we'll say, level-headed decision about what you're going to do. Are we going to go to grandma's house? Are we going to go stay in a hotel? Are we going to stay here in the house? We're going to huddle up in the basement? I mean, right. Preparing your home or your business right now will help prevent damage and prevent more costly repairs. So you want to prepare your plan, and then you want to prepare your home or your business. Prepare to decide what you're going to do, and then look at safety and security issues. For example, when it comes to safety, you got to remain alert to carbon monoxide dangers. Okay, and you know, if you talk to our friends Robert Clary and Sarah Cooksey, which we're about to do here in this next segment, I mean, they'll tell you that people do stupid things. We do stupid things. We do things in the moment that we haven't thought through, perhaps, like putting a gas-powered generator or a charcoal grill inside our house. You know, because, of course, the let's say you're on natural gas, the gas isn't available, or the electric is out, right? So you don't have any way to cook. You don't have anything for your lights. You're putting those devices inside your house. Bad idea. You could wake up really dead doing that. Florida Department of Health urges residents to take precautions against carbon monoxide, CO, which is, as you know, I hope you know this, it's invisible, it's odorless, tasteless, but it's highly poisonous. You breathe enough of that within a matter of a short time. Yeah, depending on the level of exposure, it can cause fatigue, weakness, chest pains. If you have heart disease or if you suffer with a shortness of breath, you're going to have all kinds of other symptoms possibly erupting. Nausea, vomiting, headaches, yeah, lack of coordination or confusion, even impaired vision or a loss of consciousness, all of which eventually can lead to death. Not cool, man. The Department of Health at Leon County recommends the following precautions to avoid such things. So, number one, do not burn charcoal or your gas grill inside your house, your garage, your tent, even your fireplace. No, and certainly not in your vehicle. Come on. Never use a generator indoors, including homes, basements, garages, and such. Opening doors and windows or using fans will not prevent CO buildup in the home. Yeah, not cool. You know, so you've got it operating over here in your guest room, and you decide you're going to just open up the windows and that'll be it. No, that'll be the end of you. Don't do that. Always locate the unit outdoors on a dry surface, away from doors, windows, vents, and air conditioning equipment that could allow carbon monoxide to accumulate indoors. Here's another good thing to do. Install a battery-operated carbon monoxide alarm. I mean, I think Carl's over there in the control room applauding right now because he's a big advocate of this kind of thing, and most people don't. We just don't. But we could, and we should. Install a battery-operated CO alarm or a plug-in CO alarm with battery backup in your house, and do so according to the manufacturer's installation instructions. These alarms should be certified to the requirements of the latest safety standards for CO alarms. So you got some homework to do, but you can do this. This is the easy stuff. And then, of course, check those batteries for your smoke alarms and your CO alarms periodically. And periodically means at least every 3 months. Though a good reminder is as you're changing out the filters for your air conditioning unit, which is recommended you do once a month, you know, make it the first of each month. Put it on your list. Go check the batteries in your alarms. Make sure that you got that squared away. We are also aware of the fact that in addition to CO, you have this business of people using space heaters. Now, during the winter months, when it's colder, you put a space heater in your house, and it's kerosene-fired, right, to keep you warm. But we're going to talk with these two fine people from TFD about that. I think they've got some advice. I want to say that Sarah's rule of thumb is space heater means space. Social distancing between you and your space heater. And I think that the basic there is at least 5, maybe 6 feet or 10 feet away from any other combustible. So don't put it up there next to your Barca lounger or, you know, next to your bed. Yeah, come on, think. That's all you got to do is spend some time thinking about how to be better prepared for severe weather. And this Tallahassee Prepared campaign is there to make it possible for you and I to get that information. Lots of good resources, emergency contact information, how to do your own emergency plan. With a warm welcome and thanks to our new sponsor, Capital City Gutter. They are a great company, and by the way, all of these sponsors are well known to us here for their quality of service and trustworthiness and their investment in our community. Stay with me.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453. I will try not to sing out of key.
Yeah. Oh, baby, Tallahassee Fire Department works day and night, 24/7, 365, keeping people like you and I out of harm's way and sometimes rescuing us from our own stupidity or just ignorance. So when a lightning strike hits your house, generally speaking, it's going to hit the roof, and that's where the fire starts. So our friends at TFD are going to say, you know, good idea here. Put the smoke alarms, in addition to what you may have elsewhere, in the attic and make sure they're really loud, because that's where the fire is going to start. And you may think, oh, man, that doesn't happen. Well, no. Let's talk to our friend Sarah Cooksey. She is the public information officer for TFD, and our good friend Robert Clary, Captain Robert Clary, who's in charge of public education. Folks, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having
me. All right. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Excited to be here?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to have you because this neatly and nicely dovetails with our Tallahassee Prepared campaign. So our show, along with Moose Magnificat and Widden Glass and several other local businesses, they all come together in this effort, and it runs all year long because, courtesy of Tallahassee Fire Department and people like Leon County Emergency Management, right, Kevin Peters and company, being prepared, staying prepared for severe weather, for any kind of occurrence that may threaten property or life, that's not a season, is it? That's an attitude. So, Captain Clary, you are in the business of keeping us educated in relation to such things, fire safety particularly. How does your week look from week to week? How are you helping us stay better informed?
Well, we have a lot of projects going on. We have home safety surveys right now that you can go onto our TalGov site and fill out a form. And we'll actually have somebody come out and survey your home with you and tell you about possible ideas and things that you can do to make your home safer from fire.
Look at that. And that is courtesy of these folks who think ahead of that whole scenario. And I would imagine, Sarah, that there are times when you just sort of sit back at your desk. There's probably some eye rolling going on when you consider our natural, I'll claim this, my natural lack of compliance or my complacency. It's my worst enemy, isn't it?
Well, I don't really call it complacency. Kind of in our line of work, it's more ignorance or lack of education. So we take every opportunity that we can to educate, whether it's our live fire ride-alongs that we do. We have community members ask questions, and that's one of the things that I really enjoy is answering those questions live, you know, what we're doing, why we're doing it.
Right.
Like he was mentioning, the home fire safety survey.
That's a great idea.
That's a relatively new thing. It's a free service to the community.
Wow.
You just go to our website, like you mentioned, at talgov.com. You sign up. That request comes to us. And then based on availability of our staff, we send somebody out to your home to do that. Now, that's for residential homes, not apartment complexes, but individual residential homes.
Indeed. So. And here we are sitting at this point in the calendar with a tropical storm that is staring us down. The latest tracking information we have has it pointed right here. I mean, there's good reason to believe. Now, that's a model that will change over time, and we understand that. But wouldn't this be a really, really good time to have that fire safety exam and other preparations?
Yes, and we talk about all kinds of things. So we do kitchen safety during the fire safety survey. I mean, anything in your laundry room. But more, you know, in line with the storm coming in are people that have generators. So we will actually go over generator safety. We'll explain how you don't plug the generator directly into the power plug in your home, because that can cause backfeeding, which then is a hazard to our electricians, our linemen that are actually out working those line calls.
Wow.
So we take the time to just kind of go step by step and find every hazard that you have, and then just kind of give, you know, advice and availability and things that you can do to improve the safety around your home. So In the event that we were to go over a generator and someone were to have more questions, then we would take that opportunity to direct you towards utilities or somebody like that more in line to help with that situation.
Robert, when you think about the number of ways in which Tallahassee Fire Department works to educate us, here you are the public education coordinator, director, right?
Yes, sir.
Are there gaps in that? In other words, are there places around Tallahassee where you feel like people are less informed, or do you try to target certain neighborhoods? Or how do you go about making sure that you're getting the best information out there with the most people?
Well, we try and spread the information around as best we can.
Yeah.
Through social media, and going around door to door doing canvassing events to make sure that people have working smoke alarms in their homes.
There you go.
So, you know, we partner with different groups to try and get that information out, and always try and stay ahead of the curve as far as information and the way we distribute it.
Do you have an information service, like a newsletter or something, that I can sign up for if I go to your website and say, hey, keep me posted on events and stuff?
Well, if you go to our Facebook page, that's a beautiful way to keep in touch with us. Sarah does a wonderful job of putting all the information on there, whether it's disaster preparedness or things that we have going on in the community or things that have happened in the community with live events.
Excellent. Well, you know, we have this longstanding relationship with your department and with your personnel, and the indication that we have, I mean, this goes back, I don't know, probably 7 years or so, maybe longer. We've been on the air 10 years. So I'm getting older now, and so I forget things easily. But it seems to me you folks have always been ready and at hand to make sure that our listeners are informed and prepared. And what we're talking about dovetails very nicely into our Tallahassee Prepared campaign, right?
Right.
Which is about making sure that we're thinking about all the stuff we don't normally think about. So when I talk about complacency, I have no excuse here. I mean, I'm probably pretty well informed just based on my conversations with you and staying in touch with the work you do. But it's easy to say, you know what, I'll take a look at that some other time. Whether it's a generator or maybe it's debris. Maybe I've got stuff piled up there in the backyard that I really need to deal with. And I just kind of push it aside. One of the things that I've noticed about this effort is the way in which you'll contact local businesses. So you have another department, or you have other personnel that have as their task to go in and inspect and make sure that that place of business is in compliance, right?
Correct. So we have an entire team of inspectors and investigators, mm-hmm. and the inspectors go in and they literally inspect each business every year and make sure that everything is compliant. Even around the holidays, you know, it's really common for certain businesses to stack up their extra inventory by exits and things such as that. They'll go in and they'll advise, hey, you know, you can't block your fire exit with these pallets of goods, and they just make sure that all their fire extinguishers are properly serviced and not expired. And they literally check, you know, all the emergency exit lights and anything that would keep our community safe. And they,
yes.
they work really hard to do that. They spend a lot of hours and a lot of time in follow-up making sure that the business owners totally understand what their responsibility is as the owner. And then if they have to, I mean, they can issue disciplinary stuff to make sure that those things are enforced. Yep. At the end of the day, yeah. keeping our community safe is our number
that's
one priority, and that's the deal.
Mm-hmm. And we've benefited from that here in our studios. We've had more than, I think, probably three or four times over the years, and they look at every little detail. And there was an indication, I don't know, it's probably three or four years ago, there was one of the protective faceplates mm-hmm. on an electrical outlet in our storage area. You know, painter had come in and painted the wall and left the faceplate off. Well, we didn't think about that. But this inspector looked at that and said, yeah, I need to make sure that's back on.
Right.
Now, see, something that simple, but then again, if somebody should by any chance stick their finger in that place, they're going to get hurt.
Right.
Or it could spark or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a good thing to know, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing with your electrical panel in
yeah.
your home.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll have a breaker that's been taken out,
indeed.
And then you have a space there. So you need to put
a
plastic spacer in there to keep, you know, the power may go out and
yeah.
you can't see, and you start messing around with the breakers and you put your hand in there. It's the same thing you were talking about with the
yeah.
electrical plate.
Game over. Folks, we're talking with Captain Robert Clary and Public Information Officer Sarah Cooksey, both serving us in the auspices and offices of the Tallahassee Fire Department, and we will be back right after this.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Sarah Cooksey and Robert Clary, both who serve us on a daily basis, along with the men and women who make Tallahassee Fire Department an effective fighting force on behalf of us in keeping us safe and keeping us from harm. Well beyond fire, there's all kinds of issues that come up. And Sarah, I know you've got folks on your team with the department. We talked a little bit about inspectors, but you've got other folks that do other things as well. Tell us about that.
Right. So we have 16 stations in the city of Tallahassee. Some of those stations are multi-company stations, which means they have more than one fire engine or truck company
right.
in that station.
Right.
And within what's called their first due territory, which is where they sit on the map and where they respond to first, they're responsible for doing what's called a pre-fire plan on that business. And they go in and they look for hazards. This isn't the same as an inspection. It's more so that that first due unit, when they respond to that business, they know what they're looking at and they know the layout. So if I did a pre-fire plan on your office, I would know that when I come through the front door, there's a desk on the right-hand side and so on and so forth all the way to the back. I would learn things like a Knox box is a box that we provide that you can put keys in that the fire department only has access in the case of an emergency. And that way we don't necessarily have to bash your doors in. So anyway, doing that pre-fire plan, we can then plug it into our app and a computer program so that no matter what unit's responding, they're like, okay, pull up the pre-fire plan. And it gives you step-by-step instructions on where the water connections are in the building and the different hazards that might be in the building, and just make it more effective for us to know, okay, if they say there's a fire in the laundry room, if I have pre-fire planned this building, I know that that laundry room is on the back right-hand side.
Wow.
And it's a step-by-step map, and you can even draw a map in the computer program.
Wow. Now, is that something, that's something that's happening as a matter of planning on your side, that these each of these stations, that's just part of their
right, so
regiment. But can I request that individually?
You can.
Okay.
You can. And so what we typically do is we give each station a list of all the businesses in their territory.
I see.
And then we ask that they do 2 to 3 per month. And wow. So they'll just kind of go through, and each shift, we have three shifts, has that same responsibility. And they just go in and say, hey, I'm Lieutenant Cooksey on Engine 10. We're just here to do a pre-fire plan. This is not an inspection, but this is to help you help keep your business safe so that we know what we're up against in the case of a fire.
Robert, you think about what Sarah has just told us in regard to this kind of mapping and giving you folks more information in preparation for, you know, worst case scenarios. In your experience, are there areas of, we'll call it ignorance or lack of understanding, that are more common? I mean, what is it that we, as we'll say, just as citizens, homeowners, business owners, the more common misunderstandings, I guess, about how to stay prepared or what kind of dangers we can incur regarding fire safety and other safety measures?
Well, the leading cause of fires is kitchen fires, cooking fires. People leaving stoves unattended, getting distracted on the phone or chasing the kids. You know, a good rule of thumb is don't never leave anything on the stovetop that can catch on fire. We've had instances where, you know, people may come home, the power's out, they'll put groceries on top of the stove, turn the knob or whatever, and it doesn't work. Then when the power comes back on, because they have a combustible on the stovetop, it'll catch fire. So, you know, we have different fires start in many different ways, but yeah. Cooking fires are the number one cause of fires, yeah. Yes.
It seems to me, too, you don't go through a winter without hearing of somebody who had a kerosene heater sitting next to their living room chair and, you know, sets the drapes on fire.
So the rule of thumb with heating appliances is that you, of course, don't leave them on when you go to bed. But when you do have them on, have them 3 feet away from anything that can catch on fire.
Yeah.
So you don't want anything that close to it.
Right. I noticed, too, in our home, we have a wood-burning stove, right? And it's one of the older type wood-burning stoves. It radiates heat. Thankfully, the way this stove was constructed, engineered, all of that heat is radiated, most of it is radiated forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that thing can be really, really blazing, and I can put my hand behind it, and I can feel a little bit of the warmth, but man, the front of that thing, you can't touch. So common sense says, and apparently common sense is not as common as we might hope, don't have anything within 3 feet of that heated surface.
My catchphrase for space heaters are space heaters need space. Because if they don't necessarily remember the 3 foot rule, space heaters need space.
Right.
And it's just something that's going to kind of stick in your mind.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, with that particular stove in our house, there is a slab of granite behind the stove so that it, even though it's got plenty of space, there's even that as a safety measure.
Well, you should also have it inspected every year by a certified professional.
A wood stove.
Yes, and because nothing lasts forever, and so we have to keep that in mind. And those things have to be checked out to make sure that the fluke is working good, that the fire break or whatever material that you have on there is going to be stable enough to contain the fire.
You know, that's a good point. We've been in the habit of having the chimney, the flue, cleaned every year. You know, you can get that wire brush and you just run it down there. You just do it a couple of times and you're amazing the amount of creosote and other combustible deposits will come out of there. But that's a kind of thing that maybe we just don't think about unless we have our fire prevention safety checklist there on the refrigerator door. These are the things you have to do. Do you deal a lot with kids in your work? You're trying to educate children on fire safety?
Yes. So we had a new set of challenges with COVID because Captain Clary, one of the main essential parts of his job is going into the school systems, and that's how we educate. So we're trying to get, you know, on the forefront of doing things like virtual field trips and virtual classroom type settings where this year, you know, we thought we were going to be back in classrooms, and then 2 weeks ago it's like, well, wait a minute, no, you're not. We're closing the schools down again. So we're going to get creative and do some online virtual Zoom type stuff with the teachers, because it really does start with the kids. And a lot of times they'll go home and they're like, hey, Mom, look what I learned at school today.
Ah.
We need to create a home fire safety plan, or we need to do XYZ. And that's really, I mean, we can really get into houses and go over fire safety stuff with the kids, and he's phenomenal about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also have on our TalGov page /fire, we have an educational tab that the teachers can go on or parents and caregivers can go on, and it has a wide range of information that they can talk to the kids about fire safety.
Sweet.
And also educate themselves on how to better take care of their home.
When I was a kid about 100 years ago, we did fire drills.
Yes.
Right? And that was a pretty recurring, a pretty frequently recurring event. I don't know if seems like we did it every week when I was a kid, but maybe it was once a month. But that's got to be hard to do with the way curriculums are now. Do they still do fire drills?
They do.
Absolutely, they do. And businesses also, nursing homes and stuff like that, they're required to submit a plan to us as to how they're going to conduct those drills.
Okay. Yeah, rule of thumb here, the last thing you want to be is unprepared.
Right.
And when disaster strikes, you don't want to be trying to scramble and figure out where the exits are. Folks, this is why we have these fine people helping us stay safe and stay prepared throughout the year. Lieutenant Sarah Cooksey, she is the public information officer for Tallahassee Fire Department, and our good friend and recurring guest. You're looking good too, by the way. I like the look. You got it going on, Robert.
Thank you, sir.
Yes,
you
sir. Yeah. Captain Robert Clary, who, along with Lieutenant Cooksey, you're working hard out there to keep us informed and safe. Folks, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Folks, stay with me. We got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks. We'll be right back.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back and we're talking about all things concerning the well-being of people in our community, which has a lot to do with, things like book signings. Right? So we got Susan Zerenda coming up in this hour. She's going to talk about her new book, Bells for Eli, I believe is the correct title. Yes, that is right, Bells for Eli. She's going to be at Midtown Reader coming up in the month of September. So we don't want to miss that. If you want to see her in person, get a personally signed copy of her new book. I think that'd be really cool. But you're going to learn a lot about her and her personal background, along with her writing career, and just a great conversation that we had earlier with Susan. She was on the phone with us about a week or so ago just because of the way scheduling worked out, so we pre-recorded her conversation in that way. Carl is so amazingly proficient at what he does. It just makes it too easy, because the guy just turns out such a great product. I think so. I hope you agree with me, but... In our history, Carl has been our executive producer now all these 10 years, and the guy he's as regular as an afternoon thunderstorm in Tallahassee during the summertime. It just keeps on a-coming. He shows up, gets it done, turns it out, and then says, "Thank you, sir, give me more." Although these days, I think, with all the heat and humidity, he's having to put up a lot of that. He does a lot of outdoor work as well as producing radio and music and such indoors. Really a marvelous producer he is. Works with Dave Barfield at Lonely Fox Photo Studio, award-winning These guys, oh man, we don't have enough time in the show to tell you all of the ways in which they contribute to publications here and across the country. Long-standing, well-recognized company, Lonely Fox. So if you're needing some really cool photographic work that'll just knock your socks off, yeah, that's the one you want to go for. Dave Barfield, Carl Cerny. Wow, what a great team they are. All right, enough bragging about them. Let's talk more about what's going on with our radio show. Looks like we're going to be making a move with our friends over there at 93.3 FM Real Talk, because as we go into the football season, they're up against some programming changes. They carry University of Florida football on Saturdays, and oftentimes what happens is if they have a noon game, then we get bumped. So what we've talked about is actually moving the show to another day and time. More on that as that information becomes available to us. We're still working through all of that, but it's all good. No matter what, you can always find us online at our own radio station. MooseMagnificat.com is the streaming radio station for Tallahassee, bringing you all local musicians playing their original songs all the time. And that is the sound of Tallahassee at Moose Magnificat. So we're there on Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday afternoons at 3, and again on Wednesday afternoons at 5:30. You'll find us at moosemagnificat.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast, because we create a podcast version of the show, which is actually the show in its entirety, but that gives you the flexibility and the option of subscribing, and then you just listen on demand, right? Listen at your leisure. And there are several ways you can do that. TuneIn has it that way, or you can go to Podcast Addict and do a search. Whatever your favorite podcast app is on your phone, search for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. It'll come up, and you're good to go. So, and we have thousands of you around the country who are subscribed to the podcast. God bless you, and thanks for tuning in and listening to these fine individuals who bring to us good news from their part of the world, and entirely having to do with what it is that Tallahassee is bringing to the world. And as it turns out, Tallahassee is doing its very best to crawl out of what is otherwise a kind of plantation way of thinking when it comes to our social justice and racial justice, economic decisions, business decisions. You got to keep in mind, folks, that this community never had to go through the restructuring that occurred in other places around the South, largely because the agrarian economy that was here had been here for a couple of generations or better, it just didn't change. I mean, it changed hands to some degree. And, so 75% of the population was enslaved in the census of 1860. So following the Civil War, the emancipation of Black Americans, well, then comes the reapportionment of some of the land. But for the most part, you had people now who were doing the same work, but now they're sharecroppers or whatever. They're tenants on these same plantations. And that continued for several decades. As the cotton industry, the peanuts and the tomatoes and the tobacco began to wane, you found less and less opportunity in Leon County for that kind of thing. And so a lot of these plantations just began to wither, we'll say. But in the interim, there was not a withering of the mindset, the idea that somehow, because I'm the owner and you're not, that's just kind of the way it's supposed to be. And here's the insidious part of that. both parties agree with that notion. You know, you're in charge. You're the owner. I'm not. I'm powerless. You're powerful. And that's just the way God meant it to be, which might be a good way of better understanding how it is that Leon County nationally ranks among the number one county in the country for income entrenchment. What does that mean? Well, simply put, it means that if you were born in Leon County, the chances of you making more money than your parents are the least likely in the country as counties go, based on census data. And what are those data? Well, census data have to do with those standard statistical areas or metropolitan areas, the SMA. In our case, it's Tallahassee-Thomasville. So you look around at the five or six counties then, and you look at the level of income over time among the people in these communities within this population. So income entrenchment is a real thing. And what it simply means is that if we are intent upon growing beyond where we have been, and again, encouragingly, I think this last 5 to 10 years has shown some of that, we really just have to retool. We have to rethink how we go about giving beginning businesses, entrepreneurial opportunities, startup businesses, and people freedom of choice. Give them opportunity that is beyond a kind of tokenism, and really invest in the growth of economic futures for all of us.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were gonna do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just gonna tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it, lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Susan Zarenda taught English for 33 years on the college level and at the high school level to AP students. Her debut novel, Bells for Eli, has already garnered some recognition. It's been selected as a first place gold medal winner for the best first book, among the, or acknowledged by the Independent Publisher Book Awards. It's also received a Forward Indie Book Award as a finalist. There she was, and it was identified by the Winter 2020 Okra Pick by the Southern Independent Booksellers Alliance. So it's already making waves, we'd say, and Susan Zarenda, in her own right, has contributed sizably to the work as an educator and now as a writer, and she is our guest today. How are you, Susan?
Just doing fine, Brian, and hope you are.
We are having a good day, as all good Tallahasseans hope for. Now, I should point out to our listeners here that Susan is a resident in Spartanburg, and we need to learn from you how that all worked out, where you're living there in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And your husband, Wayne, it says right here, and two Boston Terriers, as if one Boston Terrier was not enough.
Exactly.
You had to go out and get two of these guys.
Right.
What are your Terriers' names, by the way?
One is Beulah.
Of course.
And the younger one is Delia, named for the protagonist of the novel.
Well, look at you.
See, this is what I like about people who are literary and, like, you know, teachers and stuff and writers, and that things make sense. You know, there's always these back connections on stuff.
Always trying to fit things together.
I mean, because, you know, it would be me. I would name my dog Jerry or something just because I saw it written down somewhere. So this is the curious part for me initially. You spent 33 years teaching, and I think you told me by your last count, 7,000 students over that period of time.
Yes, that's my estimate.
I mean, it sounds conservative, but in that case, you came to that initially as an educator straight out of college? I mean, was this your life's endeavor initially?
Almost. I came out of college with an English major wanting to be a journalist. And my first job was at the Daily Newspaper here in Spartanburg back in the days when, you know, newspaper journalism was for real. And it was a daily paper. It went to bed every night at midnight. And I realized after a year or two that it wasn't going to work out very well for me to start a family, my husband and I, to start a family if I was working till midnight every night and he was working during the day. So I had a certification to teach, and I said, well, I'm going to try it. And it turned out that I loved teaching, and it really was my calling. I mean, I've always loved to write, but teaching really became my calling.
Of those that you had as students then, are there those who went on to pursue writing professionally that you know of?
Yes, there are. I would say more probably of the young people whom I taught in AP English at Spartanburg High School. Here, I remember a young woman well who went on to major in creative writing at Sarah Lawrence. I had some very smart students. They kept me on my toes, smarter than I am. And so I was always working and studying to stay ahead of them. And they went to marvelous schools. But I can think of three. One has become a playwright, I think. So, yes, I can, if I sat here and thought about it, I could probably at least come up with a half dozen or more who pursued writing.
Remarkable. Well, and I should point out, too, folks, when we were thinking about talking with Susan in this conversation, the first thing we noticed was the diversity of her background and then her career as an educator, but then again, how well she's been recognized. So she has won numerous regional awards for short fiction, as the South Carolina Fiction Prize, won that twice, the Porter Fleming Competition, the Southern Writers Symposium Emerging Writers Fiction Contest. I mean, this goes on. So with that, you really spent quite a number of years, I guess, in writing short fiction. I'm looking at the cover here of a journal called Red Dirt Forum, which I love that title, the Red Dirt Forum. That should be... That should be like the name of my restaurant or my coffee shop or something. Anyway, right? The Red Dirt Forum. And it in itself is a journal of contemporary literature. And I'm going to guess that you've published there and elsewhere several times.
Right, yeah. Right. Some of those journals or stories that are listed on the website are the most recent ones that I've written.
Yes.
And I was really writing and publishing stories while I was, you know, sort of twiddling my thumbs, hoping, praying that my agent was going to be able to place my book. So that kept me,
kept you going.
And I wanted, to write, it helped fill the time, and it
right.
was really wonderful that they got published. But I, started way back, when I was teaching, writing short fiction. I'm not a superwoman, so I couldn't do what some people can work a full-time job and take care of children and take care of aging parents and, get up at 4 a.m. and write. But I am not really one of those people. I need long stretches of time to write a long work, to write a novel.
Sure.
So, but I could find pieces of time here and there to work on short fiction. So that's what I did until I retired from teaching. And so this debut novel of mine has come at a mature age in my life.
Well, in fact, that maturity, I would imagine, has informed this novel that you've written. Again, folks, the title of the novel is Bells for Eli, Susan Beckham Zerenda. She's our guest. You have an upcoming event. We're going to talk about that as we go forward here. And that comes up in September. I think that you're still working to finalize the exact date and time. But at the Midtown Reader. So you're going to get a chance to meet Susan firsthand. And she'll give a brief presentation. There'll be a book signing and all that's kind of cool. Tallahassee is that way. You know, we have these connections around the region, around the country, and around the world. And here's one more for us in which Susan will be joining us here in Tallahassee again in September. We're going to take a quick break here, Susan, but I want you to think about something. When you were a student, and I mean grade school, middle school, high school, I want to know who those teachers were that inspired you or directed you in such a manner that you chose writing. Or maybe there was one teacher that was sort of your favorite. So we'll give that some thought. We'll take this break and we're going to continue our conversation. Susan Beckham Zerenda, our new friend and a friend to those who love good literature and especially who are looking forward to this novel, Bells for Eli, it's called. Folks, you stay with me. I've got more.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back and we're talking with Susan Zerenda, this remarkable woman who pursued at her first blush working for a newspaper. And that was in Spartanburg, was it not?
Yes.
Yeah.
So here
she is a writer and then realizing, that's just not getting it. So then she pursues this career as an educator. That stretches out over 33 years. Makes me tired just thinking about it. And then upon retirement, having published repeatedly short fiction in various journals, she's at that point where she can say, okay, this is my time. And my goodness, she produces this award-winning, and that's not just a marketing phrase. I mean, I'm looking at some of these accolades that have fallen at her feet for this work, and it's entitled Bells for Eli. Tell us about the story.
Okay. The story is set in a fictitious small town in South Carolina in the 1960s and 70s, and it's the story of two first cousins who grow up across the street from each other, and they become inordinately bonded, close, but not really just because they grow up across the street from each other. That would lend itself to an ordinary friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But Eli, the title character, has a traumatic accident on his third birthday when he drinks Red Devil Lye out of a Coca-Cola bottle that his father negligently left on the back steps, and he had lye in this bottle because he was using it to blow up balloons for his son's birthday party. When you mix lye with vinegar, it's like helium. And he ends up, you know, disfigured, at least in childhood, not in adolescence, but he has a metal trach in his throat. He has a strange string through his nose that goes behind his neck that's actually used to pull a dilator up through his esophagus to keep scar tissue from closing, and he's had to be fed through his stomach with a turkey baster, so he has a hole in his stomach, so it doesn't smell good. So he's frail, he's disfigured, and kids are not kind. They mock him for his frailty. They don't understand it, and they mock him for his disfigurement. So Delia, his first cousin, her whole name is Adeline, she becomes his only friend and his defender. Mm. And they form this inordinate bond of love, unconditional love.
Mm.
And then when they are teenagers, it takes you from when they're about three through their college years, when they're teenagers, Eli's outer disfigurement is gone. Of course, he's scarred emotionally and still physically on the inside, but on the outside, he's a charismatic, handsome, really heartbreaker with a double standard, because he guards Delia's vulnerability as she has guarded him all through childhood, but he, I guess, is the case of it takes one to know one. And mm-hmm. So what happens to two young people who've had this bond in childhood when they become sexual beings as adolescents?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just go away.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to grapple with that, and that's one of the conflicts in the novel, is they know that to have these intimate feelings toward each other is taboo. Of course, they know that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something they have to grapple with,
right,
among a number of other conflicts in the novel.
Wow. And in that regard, they sort of look out for each other, it sounds like.
They do.
Yeah.
They do, yes.
Yeah.
Eli embraces the counterculture that's encroaching into this insular small town, you know, in the late 60s and 70s. He embraces the drug culture, and Delia tries to keep him from falling, you know, into the wrong crowd, enamored with drugs. So they spend their lives really kind of trying to look out for each other, somewhat successfully and sometimes not successfully.
As you were going through this and writing, you said earlier that for you to be able to produce a work of this magnitude, you had to have some things cleared off of your day timer. You know, you just had to have those blocks of time and the energy that it takes. So in your particular pattern, your style, are you the one who's up before dawn at your computer writing, or are you more the overnight, late night kind of person? How did that all work for you?
I wish I were the person who was up before daylight drinking coffee at her computer, because that,
right,
I think, is what you're supposed to do. But
okay.
No, I am one of those people who writes at night, and
mm-hmm.
I don't recommend it for anyone, but it works for me because there are no distractions at night and it's quiet, and sometimes the inner critic tends to go to sleep and leave the human awake to write. At least that is the case with me, that I am more relaxed at night and not so self-critical, and I can get going. So I wrote Bells for the original manuscript for Bells for Eli over the course of about a year, probably writing 4 to 5 nights out of the week, and sometimes I would write 2 or 3 hours at a stretch, and sometimes I'd write 6 sometimes 7 hours at a stretch.
And wow.
My husband got to the point where he'd wake up in the morning, he would say, well, what time did you come to bed last night?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you?
With your glass of Chardonnay in hand, you said, hey, it's my deal, man.
That's right.
Cut me some slack.
I'm doing it my way. One of my favorite moments that I remember, because I, you know, I'm a baby boomer, and so the 60s, or my era in the early 70s,
right,
and I needed to, Eli's favorite song is Stairway to Heaven.
Uh-huh.
I needed to describe a moment in the novel when he and Delia are listening to the song and have listened to it, and he's describing it to her.
Mm.
And I listened to it on YouTube, and I did have a glass of Chardonnay, and I enjoyed it so much.
I bet you did.
To it again,
I
and
bet
then
you did.
The third time. So it was really a lot of, you know,
cool.
there was joy in going back.
Very cool
for me and reliving some of those times.
So, who was your most inspiring teacher?
That is really a hard question.
Yeah.
I loved my seventh grade English teacher, Mr. Small. He was the only teacher who taught us to diagram sentences. It's where I learned grammar.
Mm.
And then I had a very strict, exacting teacher in 12th grade, advanced composition, who happened to be my aunt by marriage.
Oh boy.
Which really made me, but I learned a lot about the self-discipline of writing.
Right.
From her.
Interesting.
But my moment of knowing when that I would major in English and that literature was just my calling happened really in college, my sophomore year, because I started out as a music major.
Ah.
And I took a elective course in Southern literature at the very beginning of my sophomore year, and we studied four female writers of the mid-20th century, Flannery O'Connor, Katherine Ann Porter, Eudora Welty, and Carson McCullers.
Hmm.
And it was just, when that class ended, I knew that I had found my place, and I decided I'd minor in music and major in English.
Talking with Susan Beckham Zarenda, she is the author of this award-winning Bells for Eli that has made its debut, and she will be in Tallahassee in September for a book signing at Midtown Reader. We will stay tuned with that news, and you stay tuned for more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We are back, and we're talking with Susan Zarenda, talking about her writing career, her career as an educator that spans now close to, I guess we're coming up on 40 years, I don't know, somewhere in that. She was teaching for 33 of those, and now she has authored this book, Bells for Eli, and we've been talking about that at length. So you had a number of folks in your development educationally as a kid and going through high school and such and on into college. When you look back through all of that, in regard to those things that were most directive, did you come to a point where you've kind of, I mean, just thought, I'm crazy for doing this. I should just stop and go do something else than try to think that I'm going to be a writer? I mean, was there that sort of hurdle that you had to, or maybe that's still the fact?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, people think, well, once you've published something, then, okay, you're on this road, and that's what you're doing from then on. And that's just really not the case. It's every new piece of writing, so to speak, is its own thing and brand new. My agent has just begun, actually, shopping my second novel, and it's going to be the same thing as with Bells for Eli. You know, it's just because you publish one doesn't mean that, you know, the next one is, it takes its own challenge. It's its own challenge at that point.
Wow. So there is no resting on your laurels, we'd say. You got to prove yourself in every work. That sounds familiar. I don't think too many of us could not identify with that. In that regard, the publishing business itself is pretty, I guess, competitive, right? Is that an understatement?
That is a major understatement.
Yeah.
Extremely competitive. And I think to be a literary agent in today's world would be one of the most difficult tasks imaginable.
Wow.
There's so many people, there are a lot of people writing, and there are a lot of presses out there, but it's really hard. I was extremely fortunate in getting my agent, beyond fortunate.
Wow.
And that's the first hurdle that a writer faces. And I've heard stories of people querying, you know, 200 and 300 agents before they before they get an agent. And then once that happens, then an agent might shop a book for a year or more before, mm-hmm. you know, finding the publisher that wants it or that he or she thinks is right for the book.
Interesting. It's curious to me, too, that you have a sense of marketing and publicity. I'm noticing here that you work as a book publicist in your own right, assisting media relations, it says,
right.
for Magic
yes.
Time Library Publicity. I'm sorry, Literary Publicity. So that means that as you come to the task of having written this novel, you know maybe better than others.
Yes, I know how difficult
what
it is.
How it works.
Right. That came about, that is my so-called retirement job, although I'm not doing a whole lot of work with Magic Time right now just because of Bells for Eli. But for the first 5 years or so after I retired from teaching, I taught this lady's daughter in AP English. And when I retired, she got in touch with me and said she needed a writer for her publicity agency. So I came on board with her, and I read the books, all the books of the authors, and I would write what I call these email descriptions, well, pitches, if you will, different from the publisher's press release, something
okay.
a little more personal.
Okay.
And so I began to work for her, pitching books to newspapers, magazines, radio, on occasion television. And so, yes, I did a lot of that for about 5 or 6 years. And now I just kind of do. I'm working on one author right now for her, but I'm doing a lot less of it than I did.
I would imagine, too, that in that business, and I don't want to spend too much time there, but I would think the whole advance efforts can stretch out there for some period of time. In other words, you have this author that you're trying to, as you said, pitch, but I'm thinking you have to start way back over here with a trajectory that hopefully may, you know, be productive over the next, what, 10, 12, maybe 18 months.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, Kathy Bennett owns Magic Time, and so I used to just push her, hurry up, get these events set, because I've got, you know, lead times on magazines are
right.
3 or 4 months.
Right.
I need to know where this person is going. And what
yeah.
he's going to do. So.
Right. When you, you're not originally from Spartanburg, right?
No, I am from the small town of Lancaster, South Carolina. It was a mill town, a town owned by Springs Mills. My father was an engineer, and so that Springs Mills was our bread and butter my whole life. And folks from my hometown have, you know, made comments in Bells for Eli, oh, this has got to be like Lancaster. And I said, no, it's not Lancaster.
No,
but it has
no.
bits and pieces of Lancaster.
Of course.
And probably a lot of other small towns.
Of course.
In South Carolina.
Yeah.
I've had people from Winsboro say, oh, Green Branch, South Carolina, and the novel's really Winsboro. Well, I did use the town clock from Winsboro because I needed it. It's the oldest working clock in the country. And Eli loves to take risks, and he likes to climb towers. So I needed that clock.
Sure.
No, it's not just Winsboro.
I think the phrase literary device comes to mind. Is, you know, you,
that's
you,
right.
You, right?
That's
and you, ta-
right.
you take those opportunities to insert
right.
your own experience.
Right, the things you know just kind of all
yeah.
mesh together with things that you imagine.
You mentioned your father was an engineer with this company. Tell us about your mom. What was she like?
My mom was a teacher. She was an elementary school teacher. And so I grew up in a household very dedicated to reading. My mother, being an elementary school teacher, we went to the library every week. We read books. And you wouldn't think that my father, who was a civil engineer, would have been such a proponent of reading, but he was. And he read poetry to my brother and me when we were little. Yeah, and I'm not talking about Shakespeare kind of I'm talking about he liked the sounds of words, and so he would read James Whitcomb Riley and, you know, those kinds
Ogden
of poets.
Ogden Nash.
Where the, yes, where the language is dominant because he loved the sounds of language, and I'm sure that had an early influence.
Interesting, interesting. And as they, as you matured and such, were they privy to your choice to be a writer? Was that part of their...
Yes. Mm-hmm. My mother died young at 64, so she didn't really live long enough to see much of what I did come to fruition. But my father, he died before, you know, the novel came out. But he was here when I won some of the awards for my short fiction, and we go. He went to a couple of ceremonies.
How cool!
With me, so yes, it was wonderful. My mother's great dream was for me to be a musician, to be a pianist. And I was really nervous when I called on the telephone that night from college and said, I will always love the piano, but it is not my calling. But
interesting.
They took it very well.
Interesting. Well, folks, this is the kind of conversation that brings us not just closer to an individual, but I think closer to understanding how people like Susan Zerenda go about crafting their careers, their lives, and their relationships with loved ones. And we've gotten a little bit of all of that in this brief conversation. I hope that you will make it a point to stay in touch with her. You can find her online at Susan Zerenda, just like it sounds, Z-U-R-E-N-D-A, Zerenda.com. So there you'll be able to find out more about Bells for Eli, her other works. And we're looking forward to having her with us here in Tallahassee coming up in September.
And I will put the time. It will either be September 24th or 25th in the early afternoon, depending on football. So I will put the time of the event as soon as I know it will be on my website. And it will
Excellent.
Be on Midtown Reader's website as well.
Excellent. That sounds wonderful. Susan, thank you so much for giving us all of your time this afternoon, and we look forward to having you with us here in Tallahassee. And congratulations, of course, on this initial success of this great book.
Well, thank you, Brian, and thank you to Tallahassee Talks. It's been a pleasure.
Folks, that's what we do here every week. We bring you people like Susan Zerenda because we love to learn more about what it is that Tallahassee is talking about this week. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, Tallahassee's radio to the world, featuring all local musicians playing their original songs all the time. That's why we call it The Sound of Tallahassee. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.